You are listening to a very holy episode of the Punk News Podcast, episode number 268. This is Features Editor John Gentile. We're just going to kick it off. You know, we've got a very holy, very reverent, we've got a very spiritual episode today. I'm here with Managing Editor Adam White. Adam White, how spiritual, how holy, how reverent are you feeling this evening?
John, I swore off the Catholicism that I was raised with back when I was a wee lad, just a young teenager who started listening to Bad Religion. But tonight, John, I'm feeling the spirit.
You feel the Holy Spirit?
I'm feeling the whiskey I'm drinking, but it might be the Holy Spirit. So
the spirit of the spirit.
We'll see.
And we got Tricky Ricky. Tricky Ricky, I know you're Jewish, but you know the Pope's been in America this week. Has the Pope's visit to the USA done anything for you? Has it made you feel anything at all whatsoever?
I mean,
itchy.
You know, just kind of like, oh, that's kind of a thing.
I would point out that Catholicism is the sequel to Judaism, if you will. So, I mean, that's something to think about.
I think it was interesting how he kind of threw his political weight around, I guess everyone kind of saw it coming, but I didn't mind it. I don't think he really hurt anyone other than meeting with that Kentucky clerk secret.
But people don't know what they talked about. You know what I mean? Like they're damning him. Maybe he said to her, you shouldn't be such a jerk. Anyways, what's interesting is I ran in, you know, he was in Philadelphia and I ran into him in a pizza shop. And, you know, I was talking to the Pope. I'm not going to comment on his political or religious views, but he's a friendly enough guy to me. We were just kind of broing down. And I said, listen, we have a podcast. We have a radio show. Would you be on the podcast? Because people might not know, Pope Francis is putting out an album. Basically, on November 27, he's going to release, or people on his behalf are going to release an album called Wake Up. And it's basically the Pope giving speeches with musical accompaniment behind him. And a lot of it is like prog rock influence. So I was talking to him. And he was pretty chill. And I said, "You want to be on the podcast?" And he's like, "Yeah, I want to be on the podcast." So listen, he gave me his phone number. Let's give him a call right now. He says we can call him, and hopefully he'll answer. Let's see what the Pope has to say. So let me give him a ring right now. Let's see here. Here we go. We're giving the Pope a call.
Hello.
Oh, hi. This is the Punk News Podcast. We're calling for Mr. the Pope.
What's up?
What's up?
What's up?
What's up?
What's up?
What's up?
Mr. the Pope, thanks for being on the Punk News Podcast. I really appreciate it.
It is my pleasure, young man. Truly, you are the fruit of the Lamb.
So listen, Mr. Pope. I'm surprised that you decided to put out an album, and really, I'm even more surprised that it's a prog rock album.
Oh, yes, I love the prog rock. I love the Rush. I love the Kings of Crimson. It's all very good, complex music that stimulates one's brain, just like a Bible.
So that's interesting, because I would not have guessed you for a prog fan at all.
Well, you see, I only like the good prog rock. I don't like the Emerson, the Lick, and the Palmer. The music is pedantic and masturbatory.
Oh, I see.
The kids, they need a positive message, and who is hipper than the Pope? I must speak to them in the hypno-music genre, prog rock.
You know, this is the Punk News Podcast, and a lot of people feel that punk and prog rock are inherently at odds.
Ah, yes, I have heard this before. But it is, how you say, misguided. Think of the fucked up, and even the Dillinger escape plan. Yeah, very punk rock. Prog rock. I like a deep punk rock, too. The Clash, the Sex Pistols, the Crass.
You like Crass?
Oh, yes. I like the Crass very much. against war and greed and execution, and wreaks kindness upon all loving creatures. The Pope elects that they hear these things.
That's weird. How about the track Asylum, though? You know, G. Voucher says some really nasty things about you and the Big J. She says some nasty stuff about you.
She don't mean these things. She's just expressing herself. As my boss, he liked to say, did I make your living thing? Of course I did, of course I did. Say, one thing, though. The Pope no lack of abortion. Now you guys have been in the abortions lately, have you?
No.
That's a good, they're good boys. I like you. Well, it looks like the Pope and the viewers are all guessed up now. I must be on my way. I have to go out to pay the attendant and roll out. Thank you, I'm a boy. Thank you. And go out and buy my new album, The Pope Does Applaud.
Well, Mr. Pope, thanks for calling in, and I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. So, I mean, I don't know, guys. Pope seemed pretty chill. I mean, what'd you guys think?
Yeah. He listens to Crass. Who knew?
Yeah.
Does he, like, put gas in on his own, or does he have a guy?
You know, I think he was gassing it himself. Like, when I saw him, he was just...
Because if he was gassing himself and he was talking to us on a cell phone, that's not fucking cool. It's dangerous.
What? You can use a cell phone and gas your car? What are you talking about?
No, not in Canada, man. They have stickers on the machines. They say, do not use your cell phone when you're gassing the car because, I don't know, sparks or some shit. I don't know. I've never seen sparks shoot up. But
I don't know what kind of crazy gas powered cell phones you have in Canada, Adam. But
I'm not saying I control the way the oil industry is regulated in Canada. I'm just saying that if the Pope was up here, that would not be cool.
Well, if there's one thing that we can all agree, I think it's the Pope is cool. And so in his honor, let's play a tune. This is a track by Rudimentary P. Nye. Actually, it's a song dedicated to Popehood itself. This is off the album Pope Adrian's 37th Psychiatric, and this is the track The Pope with No Name off Crash, well, not Crash Records, Southern Lord Records, Rudimentary P. Nye.
Mighty man! John in the 7th century rectum torment of virgin birth.
And we're back. So that was Rudimentary Peni doing The Pope with No Name. Speaking of cool records, listen, you know, once every few months when it's me, Adam, and Ricky, we talk about what cool records we've gotten lately. Adam, it's actually one of our listeners' favorite features, if I believe it or not. They like to hear us talk about what cool records we've got. Adam White, what cool records have you gotten lately?
I've been so thwarted lately. We were just – I was just down in London, Ontario, which is a city that I've actually never been to. But I was there for a wedding, and there was a record store in town there called Grooves that I wanted to check out. Did not manage to get into there because apparently I have to – you know, look after my kids and not just disappear for several hours to go through bins. So my pickings are slim lately, but you know, I'm working on it here. Picked up a couple 7-inches here and there that I enjoy and am a big fan of. I grabbed the Caskets Full 7-inch that Fat put out, which is the Flatliners single from their latest record. It's got a B-side on it. It also has their Tony Sly cover from the Benefit comp that came out on there. So that I like. It's cool. The nice thing about Fat, and we've talked about a lot of nice things about Fat lately, is that they tend to put out a lot of, you know, little hunks of vinyl about records that they've already had out. And this is actually something that Aaron had spoke about when she was on the Turns Out a Punk podcast, Damien from Fucked Up. It's a strategy that they have, is that they start trickling out 7-inches of B-sides and stuff like that on purpose, you know, 6 or 8 months after these full lengths come out, because they're trying to, like, you know, keep the interest up in it. And hey, it works for me because I like, you know, yeah, like going in and finding more stuff. Right?
Honestly, that is a marketing ploy, but it's a marketing ploy where everybody wins because the record,
yeah,
they
totally
make a little
down.
Bit more money, and we get kind of like exclusive recordings that might not have fit on the record. I love that. I love that strategy that Fat's doing.
Yeah, so that's cool. So there's a handful of things that the Flats released from that one. So anyway, so I got that. The other thing I got that I am quite excited about is I got a copy of the split 7-inch between two Buzz Records bands that I keep talking about on this show. That would be the Beverleys and Hussey, or HSY. So they released the split in, I think, October of last year. It has a song that I want to say we may have even played on the podcast before called Hoodwink by the Beverleys. And it has a song called Acid Peel by Hussey. And it's got some crazy art, and I'm pretty sure the whole thing was produced by the singer of Grays, only because I recognize his name that I can't pronounce, and I'm pretty sure that's him. But anyways, I picked that up. I had someone pick it up for me at a recent show that they were in town for that I was not here for. And anyways, that's cool. And I'm actually happy to have that, because as much as I've talked about a lot of these Buzz Records bands on this show before, most of the bands in that label have released like maybe some tapes. There's not a lot of stuff yet, not a lot of recordings. I mean, a bunch of them, we talked about these in recent shows, like a bunch of them all have full lengths that are starting to come out or are scheduled to come out this fall. But there's not really a lot of vinyl that's available from any of these guys yet. So I'm happy to have this one, I guess. So yeah, I'm just going to go with those two for now.
John, you want to go, or you want me to go?
I guess I'll go. So two weekends ago, I was down in Baltimore to see Integrity. And man, I'll tell you, that show kicked ass. Integrity, it ruled. Whenever I go and, you know, drive to a city, I make it a point to check out the record stores. In Baltimore, I've only been to one record store there before called True Vine, which it's not a great record store. You know, they don't have a wide vinyl selection, and they've got a lot of old moldy vinyl. However, even though the store itself is not great, every time I've been there, I've gotten something great. So maybe that makes it a great store. Whenever I'm there, I get something that I wasn't necessarily looking for, but I heard about and I saw there, and it's fairly obscure, and I got it, and it was awesome. That's actually how I got into Twink of the Pink Fairies. And however, I went down there and it was closed, which I kind of thought was poor form, because it was like the Baltimore Day Street Parade Day or whatever. And so instead I went to Endless Summer record store. And that record store was pretty good. Well, actually, it was poor in one aspect and excellent in another. They had a bunch of – it's basically almost only punk rock vinyl. They've got some rock. But all the punk vinyl is basically new punk vinyl. So it's like a wide selection of punk rock records, but you can get them anywhere. However, what they did have was a fairly extensive 7-inch punk selection, and it was almost all used. They had a lot of fairly rare and obscure stuff. What I got there was I got a Morrissey and the Smiths, much like Joy Division, are masters, and much like Bauhaus, are masters of the 12-inch and the 7-inch singles. And basically, they do it like kind of like Fat is doing it now, and basically the very best way they do it. On the A side, maybe they've got the actual single, or maybe they've got an alternate version of their album version. Then on the flip side, they have something that would not fit on the album, but it's super interesting to the listener. So what I got was I got two Morrissey singles from his last album, but the one before that. And on the flip side, one had a live track or live Smiths cover, "The Boy with the Thorn in His Side," live from 2010, I think. And the band does a super weird, super jacked up, super energetic version, which is super cool. I love it when bands like really make a presentation out of the single and really make it its own thing. The other one had a live cover of David Bowie's "Drive-In Saturday." And on it, Morrissey changes the lyrics Jagger to David Johansen, paying tribute to the New York Dolls, which is really cool. What else I got down there, and this is what makes you know record collecting really fun, is before Adam and Ricky, have you guys heard of the band Sleep?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Before Sleep was Sleep, they were a band called Asbestos Death, and they released 2 7-inches, and one is called the Dejection. And I got that. I actually already had it, but I picked it up because something seemed different about it. I couldn't place my finger on it. So I bought it for $6, which actually is a pretty reasonable price for that 7-inch. I got to my car and I opened it up, and inside was an ad that was meant to be put up in record stores, folded in the record itself. So the record kind of has like this exclusive artifact. So it's always fun to get like these weird exclusive artifacts from like when the album was really out, tucked inside the record. So that was really cool. After that, I went down to the record store called the Soundgarden, which is Rolling Stone called it the second greatest record store in America. I don't agree with that assessment, but it is a good music store. The new vinyl selection basically has basically all the new vinyl that you could want. But I mean, like I said, I don't usually go looking for a new vinyl. The used vinyl selection was pitiful. I mean, honestly, it made the store look bad. They should just wipe it. It's just like old junk records that nobody wants. However, the CD section of the store is phenomenal. It's one of the best CD sections I've ever seen. It's probably the third best CD selection I've ever seen after Amoeba San Francisco and Streetlight San Jose. They had and actually their prices were obscenely cheap. I got like a bunch of the new Led Zeppelin remasters for $8 each, which is insane. I got all these like obscure CDs for super cheap. But the neatest thing I got was I'll have to backtrack. The Rolling Stones recently released reissues of a lot of their albums. They were released by Universal Universal Music Group, and honestly, they did a pretty crappy job. The original album is really good, but the bonus material is severely lacking. Like a lot of the bonus material, you can tell that the bonus material was put together by just some guy or maybe a marketing guy and not a fan of the music. For example, like if you look at the Ramones reissues, you can definitely tell they were put together by a fan because they're so exhaustive and they're so well put together. You can tell they were put together with care. And in fact, I think the Ramones reissues were put together by Mickey Leigh, weren't they?
It's been a while since I've looked at one, and they are like literally 4 feet from me. So yeah. Let's just assume.
But I mean, those are beautiful reissues. By contrast, the Rolling Stones reissues, you can tell they weren't done by the band themselves, and you can tell that they weren't done by a real fan just because of the material missing. Well, about 10 years ago, a Russian company put out these beautiful, beautiful, beautiful bootleg CD versions of the first like 13 or 14 Rolling Stone reissues. And what they do is they include the original track list and then about 10 or 12 more bonus tracks, which were remastered by these Russian bootleggers and also extremely curated, basically very interesting, worthwhile material, not just like crappy demo cuts or shitty live cuts. Extremely well done. And whoever, and also the booklet themselves basically features all the different album covers from all the different countries for that album. It's without question the best series of bootlegs I've ever seen. And really, they give the official releases a run for their money just because the bonus tracks are so reissued. This Russian company did it for like the first 12 albums. When I was in Soundgarden down in Baltimore, I saw one that looked like one of these Russian bootlegs, but it was for the Tattoo You album, which is like their 17th or 18th album, which is really weird because the Russian bootlegs stopped at Sticky Fingers. So this is like 10 years afterwards. And I'm like, what is this? Like, it looks to be a Russian bootleg, but it's from an album that the Russian bootleggers never did. So, of course, I had to buy it. I buy it and I take it home, and it only has like 3 or 4 extra tracks, and they're not even listed on the back of the record. But it's completely done like one of these Russian bootlegs. So I go home and I check it out, and it turns out it was a CD made in Spain. It's a bootleg of Tattoo You, but it's a bootleg of a bootleg. That is, it's a different bootlegger trying to make it look like the Russian bootlegs because the Russian bootlegs are so highly regarded. Which that tickled me pink. I thought that was so funny.
That's interesting. That's weird. That is a weird. Yeah.
So it's a neat record, and there's really not that many of them out there. And so that's just the fun thing about record collecting. There's all these little eccentricities out there. It's a bootleg. It's a Spanish bootleg trying to look like a Russian bootleg of an official record, and it's super neat. So that's what's fun about record collecting for me. All this weird, obscure stuff out there that you can only find in the used bins. And, you know, it's much more fun for me than flipping through, you know, what new Black Flag records do they have? What new, you know, Bad Religion records do they have? So I had a blast. I recommend Soundgarden for the records. I would say Planet spent about an hour and a half. I recommend Soundgarden for their CDs. Planet spent about an hour and a half there. True Vine is a good store, but they were closed when I was there, which I thought was kind of lame. Planet spent about an hour there. And Endless Summer Records in Baltimore. Planet spent about an hour 15 there. Really nice used 7-inch selection. Nice cassette collection. Fairly generic 12-inch brand new vinyl collection.
Cool. Ricky, what exhaustive list of shit have you got, Devilers?
Well, I do have an exhaustive list. But this is over, you know, since the last time we've done it, I think, which was like at least 4 months ago, probably now.
Yeah, probably about 4 months. Yeah.
I'm going to go put a coat of paint on my bathroom then. Hold on.
Since I'm in Los Angeles, I go to Amoeba Records a lot. So, I took before I went to the Hollywood, Fat Wreck Tour show, I literally just took the whole day off, and I went to Amoeba first a few hours before I needed to get in line. So I got like a record cleaner, which I had not had before. I got the Dwarves, Blood, Guts, and Pussy. And I also got Cro-Mag's Age of Quarrel on vinyl, which was surprisingly hard. It's surprisingly hard to find that for some reason.
Well, here's the reason why it's hard to find that album. Which version did you get? Which label, you know?
Not offhand.
Is it a new record? Is it newer?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay, it was brand new.
That's probably the Kiss the Sword record, I think it's called. There's two competing versions of that album right now on vinyl. Did you have the three bonus tracks on it?
You know, I don't remember.
Yeah. So anyway, the reason that record is so hard to find is because it was originally released on Rock Hotel Records, a semi-shady company. And so no one even knows where the rights are. But as we discussed in the podcast before, both John Joseph thinks he has the rights to it and Harley Flanagan thinks he has the rights to it. So they've been fighting over it. So there's lots of semi-legitimate reissues of that. There's lots of at least 5 different CD versions of it. And the latest version, that's the one you have, that's a John Joseph authorized version, and that's a very nice version. So if you don't have that album, you should get it. But that album is extremely hard to find because even people that are trying to press it legally aren't even sure if they have the rights to it. So,
yeah, I mean, I saw it once like last year at Amoeba, and also it was kind of more on the expensive side.
Yeah, like $25 or something.
Yeah, I think around there. And so I didn't pick it up the first time, and then it was gone when I came back. But – Anyway, I also got, those are the three I got that day. I got the Eradicator. We did a story on them. It's Nick Woods's, it's Nick Woods's like other project, but they're, I think they're only doing this one 10 inch that's actually coming out tomorrow. And I'll be playing a song of off it later on this episode. And if you didn't go to Dumberfest, you had the chance to get one of 30 test pressings, and I managed to get one from the from their Bandcamp. I also got the pink and some black version of Pears' Letter to Meemaw 7-inch from Fat. Also, after I saw Toy Guitar at the Fat Wreck Tour, I got their album, I think with the Pears EP, which I thought they're great live. They're great, and the album's fantastic. I also got the Dwarves Come Clean picture disc, which I've been looking for a while. It has, I think it's Japanese writing on it, so I might have accidentally bought a Japanese version of it if it did come from there.
But what do you mean accidentally? I mean, that's better.
It is, yeah. I mean, it wasn't, but it just wasn't on purpose. And I'm sorry. When I went to the Fat Wreck Tour and I went to Amoeba Records beforehand, I found the Damned Machine Gun Etiquette on a numbered 180 gram vinyl, which was very cool. And I'd been looking for some Damned stuff to add to my collection.
That's one of their greatest albums. That might be their greatest album. So that's a good one to pick.
Yeah, it was, and also like it wasn't hand numbered, but it was like printed numbered, and there are only 1,000 of them made like that. And then Class of '86, they had their album that I really enjoyed called Future on Fire. They were tweeting about how they had like the colored version of their test pressings for sale, so I bought one from them. It's like this cool bloody red with clear vinyl. And then I also got the Dwarves Are Younger and Even Better Looking from, I think, Recess. It's a double gate vinyl gatefold with translucent blue, which is really cool. Also, I got the Against Me 23 Live Sex Acts live album, and it came on like this turquoise splatter, but they did such a great job with the it's a triple album, triple vinyl gatefold, and the way that it was designed, the artwork is just so addicting to look at. They did such a good job on it. It's probably one of the best buys I've gotten all year. And then there's this label in New York. I think they're purely an online label, but they reissued their, first of all, if you're a kid in the 90s, you knew that, like, and you watched Nickelodeon, everyone thinks like Nickelodeon back then was had the best shows, and now it's like crap. But now, this label called, Enjoy the Ride Records, they reissued their Best of Nicktoons, from the 90s, compilation, and it came on like this clear with green and orange splatter vinyl, and they also had like a 7-inch of Doug songs from the show Doug, which I got in like a kind of like a combo pack. It's kind of a nostalgia. Those are nostalgia pieces, really. If you were paying attention to Netflix, they over the summer they released the Wet Hot American Summer show, and another label pressed a 7-inch of Higher and Higher and the Wet Hot American Summer theme song, which I just kind of nabbed. I thought that was really cool. Fat also reissued Paris's Go to Prison. I got the color version of that. It's like this black with white marble color. It's really cool, and I just wanted the Fat pressing because that album rules. I also got Direct Hits, More of the Same, the Satanic singles on vinyl. This is probably the best actual find in a record store I've come across in a very long time. I don't like going to the dentist, so what I do is before or after I go, I stop at this record shop called CD Trader, near only like a mile or two away from me, And so I kind of go in there and kind of reward myself for going to the dentist. And I'm looking through the punk section, and I get to the Ramones, and I found a copy of Ramones' Leave Home, which I haven't had, but it's a promo version.
That's cool.
From 1977, and it has Carbana Not Glue on it, which
that's
is later,
cool.
which was later deleted.
That's real cool. That is cool.
Yes, and it plays fantastically. It has the original insert. It's in great shape, especially for being an almost it's almost a 40-year-old record. But yeah, that was like the find, and I really happy I got that one.
How much was that?
A stamp card. So I got like, I must have gotten like $10 off it. So I think I paid maybe $35.
Yeah, that's worth it. I mean, that's a cool record. That's really cool.
So I think that might have been what it was. It's a great little piece that, and it has like a foil looking stamp that says demo, do not resell or something like that.
Yeah, actually, just so the punk news kids know is when they're a promo record is a record that's sent to a record store. I mean, not a record store, a radio station, or somebody else to check out. And there's two types of promos. There's promos that just have a gold stamp on them, and that's basically the same. That's the normal press of the record, and they just stamp it so you can't resell. But people resell them all the time. There's also promo records with what's called promo labels, and the promo labels are usually white labels, but not always. And that pressing of the labels technically different pressing than the first pressing. Sometimes promo records have slightly different music on it than the original press. So I mean, dad rock guys are really into that. Punk kids not so much, but dad rock guys are really into that kind of a thing. I've got a couple of those, like my Hawkwind record. So just fun to have.
Yeah, I mean, for certain records, it's a cool thing to have. And then after this isn't a record, but after months of looking and scouring Craigslist, I finally found a record shelf. It's the IKEA Expedit. If you Google it, you'll see it's like
the best one. Yeah,
it's the best one. I got a black one. I got it for like dirt cheap. I put it together. Now I'm fully committed to collecting records.
The Expedit was discontinued, eh?
It was.
Yes, it's
well. This sounds way less bad than it is. They discontinued Expedit, mm-hmm. and when they did, and this was like a couple years ago, everyone on the internet freaked out because that's the only reason people use those is for records. Is the perfect size, right?
Do you think it was made for records? That thing.
I've seen pictures of people using it like for other stuff, like
so
room dividers.
I mean,
it really is.
We're not getting paid money from IKEA.
Yeah, no. So they replaced it with a brand called Kallax, K-A-L-L-A-X, which is pretty much identical, except that the
it's thinner, isn't it?
The wood that like does the frame of the I'm not a furniture person. Sorry. The frame of it, the outer walls of the shelf are a little bit thinner and I think a little bit tapered or something like that. It still fits the records the same way, but it's less heavy.
Yeah, so
it's decent. It's good. That said, I'm sitting right now at a Expedit desk, so I'm fully on board.
I'll tell you, if you do want to Expedit for your records, just like go on Craigslist and put in Expedit. People get rid of them all the time. You can get them for $25. Best record stacker there is.
Yeah,
Expedit.
For me, it was just about getting it in a car. Luckily the guy that I found it, that I bought from, he had taken it apart completely. But I recommend it. This thing is not only has it been protecting my records a lot better, but also it just rearranges the room, substantially. And
are you using it as a wall, like a sub wall?
it's not filled. So I put other shit in there too. So, but yeah, that's all I got.
Adam White, what's your opinion of a record as an artifact as opposed to a record of a thing to be played?
I have found, okay, for me, I play my records. I'm not precious about it. If I happen to have something that for whatever reason is like, you know, is of an incredibly bizarre value, then perhaps maybe I'd be a little bit more careful with it. But yeah, I absolutely play my records. So they're not here for me to collect and trade or anything like that.
If someone has a lot of records as artifacts, do you turn your nose up at them, or do you see that as a valid pastime?
No, by artifacts you mean like as like wall art?
Not as wall, like for most of my records I play, but and that's the quote right answer, say I play all my records, which it is, that's the point of a record, but I probably about 5% of my records I probably never play or almost never play, just because they're so rare or there's something special about them that I just enjoy having them and looking at them.
I think it's okay to, you know, fetishize these things to a degree. I thought you were asking about, like, you know, people that are buying and using these things as art.
I think that's kind of valid. You know, I mean,
now see, I have a solution to that. That is great. The problem with framing and hanging records is that a lot of the times the frames will fuck the records up because, obviously, if you've seen vinyl frames before, sometimes there's like a piece of plexiglass that's the front of them, and then the back of them has these little clips that actually hold the record in. But that's not good because it just presses on the sleeve. And then they're in a frame, and then you can't actually play them. A few years ago, purchased a set of wall hanging frames from a company called Records on Walls, I think.
Oh, I've seen those. Those are cool.
Yeah. They're basically all it is like a little bottom lip and a little top lip with a piece of plastic that connects them that you can put your record into, and the lips will hold it in there and then just take it out. And there's nothing in front of it. So nothing prevent, it's not permanently affixed there. It's meant to be something where you can, you know, just take the record and swap it out. It's almost like a store display kind of hanger. And they're great. And I have like six of them on my wall, and I will like cycle records that I'm really into and I want them to be like staring at me in the face into those record on wall frames. And then just, you know, when I want to play one, just pick it up and play it. Before I moved, I had one that was affixed actually to the wall right above my record player. And it was sort of the now playing thing. So whenever I was playing a record, like the cover art of the record I was playing would go in the wall hanger. So yeah, those are cool. I'll put a link on them, two of them, in the show notes. They're great. But anyways, yeah, go ahead, people. Fetishize your records. I mean, I'm okay with people having that. Well, first of all, no one should fucking care what I think about this at all. But it doesn't really bother me.
You are a man of experience and some wisdom, at least. I mean,
I am a man of wealth and taste, John. And, I mean, so long as you're doing this cause you enjoy it, then I don't really care what you're using it for. I suppose that like there's this stereotype of like that there's some hipsters out there that are just doing nothing, but I don't know, like buying Zeppelin reissues on vinyl but I don't exactly know.
It's not even like Zeppelin. It's like brand new Fleetwood Mac records for $35 that you can buy in the dollar bin for a buck.
So I mean, like, I assume these people exist because they are pressing brand new Fleetwood Mac records and all that, right? Like, you can't go find a copy of fucking Rumors anywhere. But I don't know. I've never encountered one of those people like in the wild, so I don't want to criticize.
I see them all the time now at the record store.
I don't even pay attention. I'm so focused. I've met people like that.
I imagine, Rick, you walk into a store, you put on like a football helmet, and you just start like barreling through people to get to where you have to go.
Like California record conventions are like that. I mean, I used to actually get in there and kind of knuckle it up, but I don't go to as much as I used to. And they're not as fierce on the East Coast, but record conventions in like San Francisco, I mean, you got to deal with some real mouth breathers. You know, some guys that like think deodorant is, you know, an option, you know, there's some real rough customers, you know.
So let's talk about how many copies of Rumors must be in the world, because like holy fuck, before I had ever really cared all that much about records, and like the only thing that I owned as far as vinyl was like, I don't know, like a handful of Clash records, and then like Never Mind the Bollocks or whatever, like just when I was young and I was, you know, picked them up at flea markets because I thought they were cool. I felt that like every bin that I touched was like 70% rumors.
So true.
And then this being Canada, like, I don't know, like a bunch of like Bachman Turner Overdrive records or something. But yeah, like holy crap. Like there are so many copies of that floating around, or at least there were. Like they should just put them all in a landfill, like they did with all those Atari ET games or something. Just put them all somewhere because they're clogging up the gears.
There are over 40 million copies worldwide of Rumors.
Fuck, well, like 35 million of them are in flea markets in Niagara. So there you go. Ricky.
Yeah.
Play us a song.
All right. So, like I said,
are you going to play Don't Stop Believing? Or no. Maybe Go On Your Way?
No.
Are you going to play a Journey song? Is that what you?
Oh, no. I meant the Fleetwood Mac song, Don't Stop Believing. It's actually called Don't Stop.
Oh, okay.
Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow. It'll
oh, God,
here.
No.
Ugh, how about okay. Go On Your Way? Landslide?
The well, chain? I said I was going to play an Eradicator song. So the oh, Fleetwood Mac thing, the Fleetwood Mac thing will have to wait till the next time
is
I'm
that,
on.
Is that off Tusk?
No.
All right, I'm sorry. I'm derailing this. I apologize.
Are you done?
I'm done.
So yeah, like I said, Eradicator, it has, they put out their a self-titled EP. It comes out tomorrow, but by the time everyone's listening to this, it'll be out. It's Nick Woods and a few other people from, Direct Hit and also people from, Galactic Cannibal, which was kind of like a Direct Hit offshoot. It's a cool EP. I really enjoyed it. It'll probably be one of my top ones this year. You can check them out. I don't think they're on Facebook or Twitter, but if you want to check out the EP, you can go to stonewall.bandcamp.com or eradicator.bandcamp.com. So the song I'm going to play is called On the Court by Eradicator.
Podcast, and we haven't even started talking about the news yet. That's a new record for us. But listen, let's talk about a little bit of news this week. But you know what? We've had some heavy duty podcasts lately, some real heavy topics. You know, I feel as if this is just an exposition, you know, just goofing around, having a good time. Nothing wrong with, you know, letting the stress out of the arena once in a while. Adam Mike, you agree? Do you agree?
I think so. Let's blast through these stories. None of them are too heavy. Maybe one of them, and we'll just we'll see how it goes.
All right, listen. Pussy Riot is back. They debuted a new protest. I cannot speak. I got so shook up by records. Take two. Pussy Riot. They're back. They've debuted a new protest track at the closing ceremony of Banksy's Dismaland. And I don't know if you've heard about this thing, Dismaland, but I would have loved to check it out. I didn't realize it was a limited time thing. It was kind of like a distorted Disneyland, and apparently it was like pretty big and had all these wacky, interesting Banksy-style art exhibits in it. Basically, Pussy Riot was there, and they did a protest track, and they were like in a cage and singing. And I don't know if any of the, I guess, better known Pussy Riot members were there. I think maybe Natalia was actually there. I'm looking at a picture and it looks like her, so maybe she was there. I guess, do you guys feel as though music in of itself can affect a social change? B, has society forgotten about Pussy Riot, and should we not have because, you know, apparently the oppression that those people are suffering are still suffering in Russia, I would assume.
For your first question, I think music can be the soundtrack to change, but what really made Pussy Riot it wasn't a Pussy Riot song really that really got them known to be the world activists that they are now. It was when they got arrested, and the civil disobedience was it, but their music was their soundtrack caused like a disturbance in that church or something like that originally. But when it comes to this and doing it with Banksy, that's pretty cool. I kind of want to know how they actually got in touch with him to do that, because it's hard. It's impossible to find him. But I thought the Dismaland thing was cool. I kind of hope they made like a music video for this too. That might come out, hopefully might come out later. Because that would be a really cool place to do it. There are some great shots when the attraction, I guess you'd call it, came out. Like, there's like a crashed police Humvee or something like that with helmets and like a messed up Disney castle or whatever. It was cool. I'm behind this. Adam?
I'm be totally curious to actually hear what some of this some of this sounds like. And it's odd because for the amount that we've talked about Pussy Riot and the amount that they've been in the news, I feel that I'm very underexposed to any of the actual music that they put together, almost to the fact that maybe it's a little bit secondary to what they're doing as far as being, you know, as far as like the protest is really more the issue than really the sounds that they're putting together. So me approaching this as a music journalist, I'm always felt like I'm left lacking with some of the Pussy Riot stuff, because I would love if I could hear and be really into some of the music that they're actually attaching to these crazy punk art performances and stuff that they're doing. But like, it's frustratingly hard for me to uncover, I guess, without like trolling around on YouTube for clips that they put out of it. Like, so I'm just looking at like the Guardian's, you know, coverage of this, and they've got all sorts of crazy pictures from the performance, and there's no sounds.
Yeah. And also that also brings up, like, do they ever tour just normally?
Well, no, because like they exist primarily as a protest unit, and sort of like music and punk rock and everything is their, yeah, is their avenue to do that. But they're not playing club shows, right?
Right.
Or at least not that I'm aware of. So I almost wish they would, and like that. And I don't mean to say that as like, man, I wish they would protest less. What I mean is that I feel that like there's an avenue for connecting with this that isn't being explored to the degree that it could. And I look at the pictures, say, that the Guardian has of them rehearsing for this Banksy performance, and on the one hand, yeah, it's looks pretty striking and pretty provocative and everything. On the other hand, it looks like art to me. And when I look at some of this stuff and I see like things that really seem like art for the sake of art. I always feel that they're limiting the audience there. Like certain, like the people maybe that they could have connected to are going to look at this and go like, yeah, that's that crazy Russian protest group doing their crazy Russian protest art. Like, I'm going to eat another donut now. Right. Where they're not connecting with people necessarily who maybe they should have. They're connecting with people that are inside, you know, inside that culture already. And I guess that's where I mean, far be it for me to criticize people that have been jailed for their art or anything like that. But just like, I wish I could hear more. I wish I could see more footage, hear more music of what they're doing. So this is me wanting more. This isn't me criticizing so much. Does that make any sense? My nuts, yeah, totally. John?
It absolutely does. It's almost like, it's almost like the music for Pussy Riot, the music itself can actually function precisely what I guess revolutionary music is supposed to do. Is, I mean, Pussy Riot is not a band, it's a collection of people. But if they put together a band and have them tour, it probably would really substantially increase the Pussy Riot message and have the effect that they're hoping to do it. People wouldn't just say, oh, that's great music. People would actually, or society would actually, move towards the change that Pussy Riot is hoping to see. So in effect, Pussy Riot actually has the ability to capitalize on the concept of revolutionary music, which we've, you know, which I guess you could say was given to birth to in the 60s and harnessed by punk rock in the 70s. And let's be real, a lot of revolutionary punk rock, it's cool to listen to, but doesn't really do anything whatsoever. A lot of it really doesn't, you know. Of course, there's always that quote, which is true too. Punk rock might not have changed the world, but it changed me, which in effect changes the world. So, you know.
Yeah, sorry. I decided to take a long drink while you were saying that, and then you stopped. Now here I am.
Adam White's drinking whiskey, people.
I am. So yeah, all right, we're going to jump to the next thing here. This is maybe the heavier story that we got to talk about. Although, I don't know. We'll see. So you guys heard about this the CEO of this drug company that jacked up his the price of a 30-year-old drug or something like that.
Yeah,
you heard about this? It was in the news. All the presidential candidates and stuff like that are talking about it. You know, it was all over the internet. People were super mad on Twitter. Anyways, there's a company called Turing Pharma. They increased the price of a drug that treats a really obscure HIV complication. They've jacked the price of this thing by 6,000%. I don't have the number. Yeah.
I'll point out that actually, though, it doesn't only treat that. Like, people mention that because HIV is something that I guess is in the national public interest these days, but it actually treats a lot of other things as well. So it's not a drug that's specifically made to treat HIV complications. HIV complications is one of the things that it happens to treat.
Right. Okay. So anyway, so this drug was I forget what the price. I don't have it in front of me right now, and I probably should. Or it was something like $13 a dose, and then it went up to what was it, like $7,000 or something like that.
Yeah,
like
it was
pretty nutty. And I have to imagine that like the way that your drug system works is probably super crazy. So anyways, this 32-year-old guy who is the CEO of Turing Pharma, who jacked up the price. When you saw all the pictures of him, a lot of people commented on this really before this story came out that like the kind of looked like an emo guy.
Yeah, he's emo.
Yeah.
And he's totally an emo guy. So turns out that Martin Shkreli, how do you pronounce his name? There's an H in there that shouldn't be in there, and it's really throwing me.
Douchebag.
Martin Douchebag, right. So he was, turns out, a major, although silent partner in the record label Collect Records that is run by Thursday singer Jeff Rickley. So this caused quite a bit of strife amongst the Collective Records roster, the people in that band, the people who had bands on that label, but also Jeff Rickley himself. You know, one of Jeff's other bands, aside from Thursday, is a band called United Nations, which is a super political band that would totally be against the kind of things that Mr. Douchebag here has done. There's other artists on this label, like Nothing, Wax Idols, and Sick Feeling, and all of them have made statements and spoke out about this. So this put the label in a really difficult spot. Jeff has commented on this a number of times, and the one that's actually goes with our story is a little bit older. There's been a newer one, so I'm going to hop over to that one. So this is a statement that Pitchfork ran on the 23rd from the label, saying that they will now sever all of their ties with Martin Douchebag. So here's what it says. I don't even want to try pronouncing that guy's name. It's not a disrespect. It's out of my inability to speak. So
I'll say that disrespect. The guy's a douchebag. I mean,
well, yeah, I mean, okay. Here's what the label said. They said, today, Collect Records, with the support and encouragement of all of our artists, have agreed to fully sever our relationship with Martin Douchebag, effective immediately. When I decided to get into business with Martin, we took him on as a patron. He was completely silent and allowed us to do business as we pleased. His only ask was that we sign bands that we believed could make great art, given the right environment, and not to focus on a profit, no matter how dire the bottom line. Never in a million years did any of us expect to wake up to the news of the scandal that he is now involved in. It blindsided and upset us on every level. As such, we know it is impossible for us to continue having any ties with him. For my part, I've always strived to make Collect a place that was so liberal, encouraging, and artist-friendly that no one would ever walk away from us willingly, though to do so at any time would be very easy. To that end, I hope that our bands continue to believe in our guidance and passion. Any of them that have had an incurable crisis of conscience or of confidence will be allowed to leave with nothing but the kind of encouragement that we've built our label on. For all of the kind words of encouragement that we've received over the past 2 days, I'm forever grateful. From all of us here at Collect Records, thank you. So that's a statement that that they put out. Oh, look, and Pitchfork actually has the detail that I wanted. The price went from $1,350 to $750. So there you go. There you go. This label was kind of caught completely with their pants down, because the guy that was secretly fundraising them turned out to be a pharma douchebag. John, what do you make of this? Is there a cautionary tale here, or is this just like total shit luck?
I've got to say, I would say this is not a cautionary tale. Here's why. First of all, I hate having to tip my hat to Adam White and his Canadian smugness, but the U.S. medicine system is screwed up and it needs a major overhaul, no doubt. This is merely a symptom of that. This guy's a douchebag. He's making money. He's literally making money off death. You know, he's saying, you will die if you don't pay me this exorbitant rate. And the only reason I'm charging this exorbitant rate is because I have the ability to charge this exorbitant rate. He didn't even put in any of the effort to invest or create this drug. He just bought it and saw a area where he could really, exploit, and decided to do that. So this guy's an asshole and he's soulless. What can I say? I hope capitalism works and that someone else comes along and creates a generic for a much cheaper price. I mean, I could see raising it a couple of bucks, but this is just ridiculous and obscene. And I hope I actually think the price might have actually got knocked back down due to such, negative PR that he got. But if not, I hope another company comes along and creates a generic and at a much cheaper rate. That's what I would do. I wish I knew more about this, because I would do it myself. But, because it is a generic medicine.
You cook some up in your garage.
John's brand medicine. Do you have this obscure disease? Come buy my medicine. I give it to people in like little baggies.
It couldn't go wrong at all.
John's Dallas Buyers Club.
So anyways, with regards to Jeff Rickley, the real person at fault in the scenario of the record label is music fans, and here's why. If you bought music instead of streaming it, if you bought music instead of illegally stealing it, if you bought music instead of, sharing it or whatever you do, then bands would make money and record labels would make money, and we wouldn't have to rely on donors, rich donors, to fund music. And this is something I talked about 3 years ago, and go back and listen to the podcast. And I hate to say I told you so, but I told you so. And I'm sorry I told you so, because this is not the situation I want to be in. But more and more artists and musicians are dependent on rich donors. And the problem is, not always, but often, rich donors are despicable people. Not always, but a rich donor is more likely to be a despicable person than the average person. And actually, science has proved this, in that people that are ruthless are more likely to make money than people that are not ruthless. There's lots of studies out there. So this is going to happen more and more. What duty does Jeff Rickley's record label have? I mean, basically, you can't force a record label to, you know, we saw this issue with Not Against Me. What was that band? What's the band from Pittsburgh, the punk rock band from Pittsburgh? That is Anti-Flag? Is it Anti-Flag? Remember Anti-Flag? They had the promoter that said some really dumb stuff about Trayvon Martin. So the question is, again, how much duty does a band or a record label have to investigate the background of people they do business with? I think you can't – most people have something maybe not unsavory but negative about them. You know, most people have said something bad, have done something – you know, I don't see people have murdered people, have done something as bad as this, but nobody's a saint. And if someone thinks they're a saint, then they really aren't a saint. So how much of a duty does a record label or a band or whatever have a duty to investigate the people that they're working with? I'd say not that much. I mean, if after a cursory reading, someone comes across as an okay person or a person that's not a real douchebag, then you got to give the band or the label a free pass. And if it turns out the guy's a douchebag, then you can't really blame the band, because how much investigation do you really have to do? I mean, especially when there's not a whole lot of money to go around, when you're barely breaking even, you know? So my answer is not that much. I applaud Jeff Rickley for this. He manned up. He said, this guy's a douchebag. I'm going to sever ties with him. And I think really the guy just said, okay, I'll leave. You know, I'm a douchebag and I'll leave because I don't want to bring heat on you. And so this douchebag probably walked away willingly. But I applaud Jeff Rickley. This guy was a douchebag. What was that, Adam? You want to say something?
No, I was going to – that's the one interesting thing here, is that like the guy must have just agreed to walk away.
Yeah, I mean,
because it's not like this label – well, they said the label doesn't make any money. So it's not like they turned around and bought him out.
Yeah, and also, I mean, this guy is a rich guy. If he owns – I mean, I tell you, at times I am envious. I'm like, this guy's 32. He's my age, and this guy is like – buying medical companies and it's a hedge fund investor. I have no idea how to get that rich, like that quick, you know? I guess you just become a finance guy and be ruthless. I don't know, man. Like, and sometimes I'm like, why aren't I that rich? How come I'm not that smart? I what can I say? I'm embarrassed that I'm not as rich as this guy. Although I'm not, I feel as though I'm not as much of a douchebag as this guy. You know what I mean? So I don't. Adam, you feel that way? You see like these super rich guys that are like 30, and you're like, man, I'm a little jealous that I'm not that rich. Do you feel that way sometimes?
I do actually. You know, the thing that has really occurred to me recently whenever I sit down and I watch like a hockey game, and you know they'll be talking about like the people that are like that are the stars and. To me, looking at them on a TV and them playing, they look physically bigger than me. So I have the little boy complex where I'm like, I am a child, and that is the big, strong sportsman doing his thing that you do when you become a big person. And then I find out that they're like 24. I'm like, fuck off, right? Like, how old is Sidney Crosby right now? It always makes me mad. He's 28. Like, fuck you, man.
Yeah.
What I was confused about is wouldn't the patents on the drug be like long gone by now?
Here's the answer. Here's how a patent works. Well, roughly a patent lasts 20 years. Not exactly, but rule of thumb, a patent lasts 20 years. I don't want to go too deep into this, but there's copyrights, trademarks, patents, and trade secrets. A copyright is your protection of a book, of a movie, of a song. That lasts life of the author plus 70 years. A trademark is a logo or a phrase, the Coca-Cola logo. I'm loving it, McDonald's. That lasts in perpetuity as long as you keep using it. A patent is basically an invention or something that is useful. Copyrights and trademarks may not be useful. A patent has to be useful unless it's a design patent. But we're talking about utility patents. Utility patents last 20 years. So let's say I invent a drug that cures the common cold. If I file for a patent, only I can make the drug that cures the common cold for 20 years. But after 20 years, anybody can copy it and do it for free. Then it's generic. That's why you'll see after medicines are 20 years old, they immediately become super cheap. And that's the wonderful thing about patents. However, in this case, because the ailment that it was treating is so rare, even though it's a generic medicine, this is the only guy that's making it. So Ricky, you and I could make a generic equivalent, but the problem is no one else is doing it, so you and I have to invest the money to make the generic equivalent, which if a medicine is not already in production, is actually very expensive to make. So the problem here is there's only a select number of people that need it, so the capital needed to make a generic is greater than the money that you would make from selling it to people that need the medicine.
Yeah, then this is just like bad business ethics.
So this guy's got a stranglehold.
Yeah, so. That's – I mean I wonder if this whole thing, this whole like scandal or whatever you want to call it, will kind of maybe get a company behind making a generic kind and then like
I hope,
you know,
so.
Kicking them out of the market or something like that.
Yeah, I hope so. So what I was saying is Jeff Rickley, he manned up. He saw there was a problem, and he figured out a way to get the guy out of the company. Whether it was friendly or not friendly, he did the right thing. And that's all I can say. Adam, do you agree he did the right thing?
I agree. He did the right thing. I think he was dealt a shit hand. You know, I actually feel kind of bad for him.
Yeah, yeah. It's like he didn't ask. He's just trying to put out records that he's in the middle of this PR disaster, you know?
I know. Well, that and his whole, you know, like, United Nations is such a fucking political band that, like, oh, man, like, this could not have happened to, you know, like aside from this happening to, like, I don't know, like, anti-flag or propaganda or something
crass.
Like that. Like, yeah, crass. Like, you're pretty far down the political band spectrum there. Oh, man. So, we don't have much left to talk about here. We have two things that we are going to leave you with, really, world, as kind of an assignment for next week. So you can join us. And yeah. Talk about these things.
Let's hope it turns out that Ricky isn't like some hedge fund investor the next time we're on the podcast with him. And he's like, oh, I just raised, you know, diabetes medication 5,000%.
No, I can guarantee you I'm not that.
Ricky, I want you to become rich off something like this hedge fund investor so I can live vicariously through you. I really wish I was as rich as this.
No,
guy.
No, Ricky could get rich and then just, you know, like help a brother out afterwards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
If I get rich like that, I'm doing punknews.org fest.
Yeah, that sounds like
and
a then, plan.
And bring in the and I'd bring the staff out to wherever we're gonna hold it.
Yeah, let's do it in, I don't know, Jamaica. Adam, where do you want Punk News Fest to be? Italy?
No, I'm thinking like some sort of island.
Jamaica's an island.
No,
you
not
know, by the you
not,
know, maybe
not, not like an island nation where a bunch of people live, like an island
islands.
That is otherwise like you know, only inhabited by deer.
How about Easter Island? Let's do it on Easter Island.
All right, cool. Anyways, here's your homework for next week, everyone. So you have two things to do. First of all, a video of the Constantines playing at Toronto's historic Massey Hall. Recently went up. I'm going to post something on Punk News about it tomorrow. This was a major show. If you know the Canadian music world at all, Massey Hall is just this revered, just huge. It's not a club. It's like it's a seated venue with like orchestra seating and everything like that. But like there's so many recordings of, say, like Neil Young playing Massey Hall in the 60s that are, you know, big deals these days. So, but anyways, though, so the Cons recently played Massey Hall. Video of the whole performance went up on YouTube, or at least most of the performance went up on YouTube. So that is there. Everyone should check it out. I was watching it as we were getting to start recording this show, and, you know, I had it on, and then it was playing, and then it just started sucking me in more. And like third song in, I'm just lifted by it. So anyways, there's that. You should watch that. Thing two, Ricky's going to tell you.
Thing two is
Fleetwood Mac's new album coming out next week. Don't stop thinking about tomorrow.
Nightbird's new album, Mutiny at Muscle Bay, at Muscle Beach. I'm sorry. Muscle Bay, the Muscle Beach, is now streaming. Listen to it. And if I'm back on next week, I'll be happy to talk about it. But just in case I'm not, this album kicks ass. This is as a whole, this is probably their best work. They're also great. You know, there's also a few that I totally would pick to put on like a playlist. But as a full album, this is probably their best work. I'm loving the tracks. I'm Wired, Blank Eyes. Mutiny. I mean, the title track is phenomenal. And then Off the Grid, if you remember, C.J. Ramone was actually a part of this album. And you can hear him do, first of all, he counts off the track like he did in the Ramones, which is just fucking cool. Really fucking cool. And then he also does some of the backup vocals on that song. And also, if you haven't heard Left in the Middle yet, I mean, that's been out for months, so get on it. And
hold on, Ricky. Yeah. Ricky, don't tell anyone what you think about this record so we can reveal next week.
Well, I don't know if I'm going to be on next week, so I wanted to get it out now. If we can go into it a lot more, I'm sure. But I'm just giving off my favorite tracks. And stuff
if you're
like
not
that.
On next week, we're going to tell everyone that you hated it.
So. That's fine. No, I got my album. My album's pre-ordered. And yeah, I just hope they just don't come out here that much at all, which sucks. They haven't been out here in at least, I think it's been over a year and a half now. And I really wasn't too aware of them, and I wasn't aware of their stuff that much back then. And I want to see them. So, but I think they said like 2016. They seem to stick to the East Coast, don't they?
Well, yeah. I mean, honestly, and this is again the fault of the same people that I blamed before. Is I mean, Nightbreds make okay money, but none of them make great money. Actually, I don't think any of them do as a living. So it's super hard to tour when you know you got a real job. You know,
right. Nightbirds, come to Los Angeles. There is a Muscle Beach in Venice, on the Venice Beach Boardwalk. Play there. That'd be cool.
That would be awesome. That's have punk news fest on
fuck Muscle LA. Beach. Nightbirds, come to Niagara Falls. You can play in my basement. It'd be great.
hey Nightbirds, I'll see you next week on the East Coast.
That's a low blow.
All right, guys. Right now, at this very moment, there is literally a fire truck, an ambulance, and four cop cars across the street from my house. And I really want to go see what that is. So peace out. Podcast at punknews.org is how anyone can email us. I'm gone. Bye.
Later.